This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
Oh, we got a good one today, everybody. Okay, listen up. If you're looking to make a change, you want to develop your talents, identify them, figure out your passion, maybe meet the one, build your business, or maybe start a business, this is a key component of what you are going to need to do that. Our guest today is David Mezepel. And listen to the title of this book, Contagious Optimism, Uplifting Stories and Motivational Advice for Positive Forward Thinking. Doesn't get any better than that, David.
Exactly.
So I need people to give us a little bit of a backstory on how we got to, you know, little 12-year-old David to, you know, best-selling author David.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me today. Well, that's a great question. Well, going back to when I was 12 years old, right through to the present day, I've always been very excited about everything, whether it's falling off a bike or riding that bike perfectly down a hill. And the reason is being exposed to older relatives and older family friends as the youngest in my family, I always realized that people have learned from their perseverance. They have learned from their obstacles. So every time I learned something, I'd be so excited. And that translated into an optimistic, positive personality that I've always radiated onto others. And I've always found the silver lining in everything, whether it's my first date, my first job, graduating from school, or starting a business.
Okay, because you brought it up. Who was the first date? You couldn't, I mean, come on. There had to have been some nerves going on there on your first date. I can't imagine you're like, I'm so excited. I'm not nervous at all. Come on, David, fess up.
It's a great question. So my grammar school was all boys. And when I switched to the local junior high that was co-ed, it was fantastic. And there was this really pretty girl in my class. And, of course, I wasn't driving. I'm only in seventh grade. So I asked her to the movies, and then I had to ask my parents to drive us and ask her parents if we could pick her up. And that was my first date. And the movie was, I think it was Karate Kid 1.
Do you remember in that? Way to go. What a stud. I know. Let's take her to this movie. Okay, so you've sort of always had this, and I love what you said about the older relatives, because you realized that they learned from, you know, their struggles. And so you were growing up hearing these stories. Were you an only child?
No, I was the youngest, but I have a brother and a sister.
A brother and a sister. Okay. What was your first job when you first thought, wow, I'm earning my own money. I'm enjoying this.
My first job was walking around the community or riding my bike to wash people's cars. I would go to their home and wash their car in their driveway, and then I'd chamois it off, pull it in the garage, and wax it. And I started doing that like 9, 10 years old.
So that's like a little bit like an entrepreneur, yes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you think we all have that sort of entrepreneurial spirit in us?
I think we do. I think everybody has that capacity to be an entrepreneur. The difference is for some people that have started out working for others at a young age, they got used to the security and the simplicity of knowing you had a paycheck and 9 to 5 and all that. For others who started out washing cars and cutting lawns and delivering newspapers, you got a taste of being an entrepreneur at a young age, and it would, for most people like that, it would stick.
Mm-hmm. And right now there are a lot of people who do not have full-time jobs, and I'm not ashamed to say I'm one of them, okay? And there was something in your book that I want to read people, because this is really important to listen to this. Stock market collapses, real estate collapses, industry collapses, and even fraud have all rung our doorbell over the years. What is the byproduct of all these experiences? And you could add, you know, tons of other in that line there. And the word is opportunity.
Yep.
Because you're going to find it hard for people who don't have the safety and security of a full-time job to get up every morning and be optimistic. So how do we deal with that?
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate you reading that quote because that's one of my favorites as well. Well, really, for me, I have found that when you learn about how others have persevered through difficult times, how others have gotten up in the morning during the roughest times, when you learn how they have done that, it makes you realize that you're not alone. You're not isolated. Other people have been there, and they've been through it. And just knowing that gives you the confidence. It gives you hope that you, too, can persevere and potentially emulate their outcomes. So that's how I suggest people can get through those tough times. And then you could take it further. You could say, you know, you have to be grateful. Even at its worst, you do have blessings in your life. And if you just look at those and appreciate those, all your troubles, they don't go away, but they become surmountable. But when you think you're in a quandary you can't get out of, it's a little harder to see the light.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even simple things, and you're kind of talking about this, David. If you got up out of a bed today, hey, that's something to be grateful for.
Exactly.
If you crossed your floor and actually put some jeans on, there you go. Did you open up the fridge and there was milk in there? Congratulations. I mean, there are just three things right off the bat where that attitude of gratitude can raise the level. What happens to us physically, maybe cellularly, when we are optimistic, David?
Well, from a scientific standpoint, you know, we release those hormones, and there, you know, there's several of them, and they're very powerful, and it's been proven about how these hormones really have an effect on and how we go about our days. I'm sure you've heard about oxytocin and dopamine, and they're all neurochemicals, and they're all part of that whole hormone class. Mm-hmm. And really what happens is when you're happy and you're excited, it not only generates energy, but it radiates to others and it helps them. That's why it's contagious. So it's very important to realize that it's not just pie in the sky daydreaming. It is actual science behind what makes you feel good and what makes others feel good as well.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever been stuck in the poor me cycle, even you?
I have. Mm-hmm. I have. I've had those days and where things would be tough. You know, years ago when the stock market collapsed and my company was supporting a lot of the technology companies in Silicon Valley, we got killed in 2000 when that collapsed. And I really was like, all these years and all this time and all this money we spent working, and here I am, you know, having to let people go and potentially close our doors. But I found opportunity in that cycle, and again, that's, you know, trying to be a contrarian. And I've had other issues. I've been through divorce. I had a really bad accident when I was young, and sure, I definitely I had my bad days. But again, I got through them like everybody else.
And I think part of them is going ahead and recognizing certain things like anger. Some of those things, like when you went through a divorce and you got in an accident, you're laid off from a job or whatever. I don't think that you're even suggesting to people, hey, just don't pay attention to your anger, because it's going to be there, right?
Yes.
So what is the best way to deal with that anger from, you know, the injustice of it all, if you will, because that's what goes through a lot of people's heads?
Well, you hit it on the head. If you embrace it, you're already halfway there. If you recognize, holy cow, this is terrible, or I'm in trouble, or these, you're there. It's when you're in denial, and then denial leads to whether it's seclusion or depression or completely crawling under a rock. That's when it's a problem. But when you address the problem, just address it right then and there. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to cry. It's all these things are okay because you're acknowledging it. You're accepting it. It's the people that don't cry at a close relative's funeral you have to worry about. And that's the type of thing. And I want to add, because I get this question all the time. Mm-hmm. When we talk about all these things, you know, optimism by itself can be daydreaming, but you have to combine it with reality, because success in any area is when you combine reality with optimism and effort. It's when you're just optimistic, but you're not doing anything about it, that you're daydreaming. So in the cases of anger, You have to acknowledge them. You have to address them. That's realistic. But then be positive. You'll get through it. And that's the optimistic side of it.
Yeah, you actually segued perfectly into where I wanted to go next. I talked to you briefly earlier about my friend and I, and we both happen to be unemployed at the current moment. And she is like, 50 to 75 resumes she's had out. She is on it, very dedicated to that side, but is lacking in the belief and optimism. Whereas I am, 110% in the belief and optimism that something will come to me, and I am not as dedicated in the resumes. I'm more like contacts. I'll call people and things like that. So there's almost, it's like sort of lopsided. Do you believe that they're both successful? I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I'm getting to this other than, I'm really trying to figure out why I just have this overwhelming belief that it will be there. I'm still doing some stuff, but not as much as my friend, because she's on it all the time, but yet her belief system is lacking.
It's a great, great point you've brought up. I know exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
So where's the balancing act between being positive about it and then the effort and the,
yes,
going, doing the work to get there? Well, we run these, whenever I give talks, at the end of the talk, we have these forums where we let people share their stories. And some of them have become an impromptu focus group. And during a lot of those events, the subject of employment always comes up, the subject of finance, the subject of relationships. But the number one right now is always employment. And what we have found at all these events throughout the U.S. and Canada is that people who are positive and who are optimistic, when it comes to the interview process, for example, the interviewer picks up on that, and it has brought them back for second interviews, and usually they get the job. That whole optimistic, positive attitude, yields confidence, and that translates into getting the jobs, or at least getting the interviews, getting in. And even if you're positive in writing your cover letter, it radiates right through the paper to the person who's reading it. So you have to be confident, and you have to be positive about your aspects. Now, along those lines, you might have to apply for a job that's not exactly what you want.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a cut in pay from your previous job. It might be something you don't want to do at all. We have a story in our book from Karen Wright called "I Was Dead Broke, But Not Dead," and it talks about how she had to take a major setback in her career, but because she did that, she bit her tongue, she did it, she was positive. She got through it, not only with flying colors, it took her in a whole direction she never thought of. And now she's not only doing what she loves, she's doing something completely new that's added so much zeal to her life that she's so grateful she lost her first job.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also a thing, too, as I'm noticing about myself, is that sometimes I will look at the requirements, and if I start getting nervous or scared, thinking I don't have that skill, and I can hear myself talk myself out of putting in a resume for it. So a lot of times when they have those are just like a wish list. You don't have to have every single one of these requirements.
Right.
Yeah. So, go ahead and put something in. Try and have that, confidence. Look, it's so funny. I sound like my own cheerleader here. Lisa, go ahead and put that resume in. Don't worry.
You're terrific. I mean, you hit it on the head. And not only do you not have to meet every one of them, the person should really include things they are good at. I mean, I could tell just from talking to you now that you are a very extroverted, very interpersonal person, and I would imagine that would translate extremely well with, say, a potential employer. So I would expand on the things people are good at, and just don't downgrade, but don't overdo that you don't meet this, you don't meet that. You have to go forward with what you are good at. It's sort of like if somebody has a book and the book says 10 ways to do something, doesn't that sound so much better than 10 ways not to do something, even though it could be the same book?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And my new reference will be David Mezapel, and I've got your phone number. Excellent. Wonderful. So along with the whole talking about, you know, jobs and employment, love comes up every time.
Yep.
So how do we meet the one?
Wow.
And well, stay positive about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so many people go through all kinds of relationship, I don't use the word issues, but they go through relationship circumstances over the years, whether it's, you know, I broke up with so-and-so, or she broke up with me, or we didn't see eye to eye. Well, every one of them, every single one of them is the perfect learning experience. If you know that, you know, not showing any chivalry, not being a little bit old-fashioned on that date, if you know that that translated into, hey, this relationship didn't work out, then maybe show a little more dignity to somebody when you take them on a date. Or look at divorce. We go through this all the time. With divorce, people talk about how horrible it is. Well, you know what? When you were going through the separation process, most likely there was fighting. If there was kids, it was an uncomfortable environment. All these things are horrible. You know what? When you cross the line, that divorce line, how much better was it? It's 1,000 times better because all that tension is gone. Well, you could just wind that down and just look at a basic relationship and why it ended. You know, there's no, usually people blame the other 100%, but in reality, that's not the case.
Right.
It's either 70-30, 60-40, or 50-50. So look at where the problems were, analyze those, and consider them learning lessons. Don't consider it the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. And make sure that you still take with you that you are a person who's valued and worth loving. Because a lot of times, too, and I'm divorced myself, learned many great lessons. Biggest one being, you know, don't force something to occur that's not there, no matter how bad you want it.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Can I be, you know, you tell me if I'm crossing the line here, but what lessons did you learn from your divorce?
Well, it's funny you asked that because I was going to mention when I went through my divorce, what happened was I was in grad school when I got engaged, my first marriage, and that was the early 90s. And so I was in grad school, I was starting a company, and I was never around. So when I finally finished grad school, everything was going well with the company, and we started having a life together. I started, celebrating. We started partying, and I started going out with friends a lot. And I wasn't always there for my ex-wife, and she, on the flip side, had zero tolerance. Didn't really like the idea of constantly being social. But a lot of what I did in my career required us to travel and be social with our clients.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't work out. It ended by 1998, and that was fine. But and we're friends. Everything's cool. But when I got remarried in 2002, I knew from that divorce to be a little more respectful of what she likes. And I noticed that she was very, very accepting of, you know, my job, the requirements of my job, the obligations, and it really was a nice balance. So that learning experience for me was learning to respect what they like and don't like and try to find a happy middle. Don't just assume everything you like, they like too, because that's not always the case.
Yeah, I always laugh on these, you know, these internet dating sites when people say, I want someone just like me. How boring is that?
You know, exactly.
You don't want someone just like you. You gotta shake it up a little. So if you're out there and you're looking for the one, and understand and know that it's okay that you go through grieving process of when a relationship ends. And the hard part is that sometimes we want relationships on our time, not God time or whatever, you know what I mean? And
right.
we're constantly going, oh, I'm this age and my clock's ticking and I don't have anyone. And so how do we stay course when a lot of that's going through our brain?
That's a great question. You know, it's hard because some people, whether it's a relationship or you talked earlier about job hunting, some people just get impatient. And what happens, and rightfully so, as time goes by, things aren't working out. You start to get, you know, a little bit down. You're like, why am I having a hard time meeting the right person. I mean, I live here in South Florida. Pretty much this is my home. And there's a lot of single people, yet they don't seem to meet each other. And so people get down, like, why can't I meet the right person? Why is time going by? I want children. You know, the cliche, my clock is ticking. Well, the reality is, stop looking. Stop worrying about it. Mm-hmm. You have friends. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy life, because you will absolutely connect with someone at some point in your life when you stop looking and worrying about it. I swore in 1998 I was not getting married again. And I really was having a great time being single. And I met my wife. I met her in just a very unique way, how we met up. And the whole thing changed. But I certainly wasn't looking. And I could tell you time and time again, everybody we meet when we talk about this topic, it's the same thing. I wasn't looking. I wasn't looking. I was just living. I was enjoying my exercise or my sport, my hobby or my career.
Right.
I wasn't looking.
No, and that's fantastic advice. There are so many really cool stories in Contagious Optimism, and I want to share this one with you because it sort of hit home with me, and it's adorable. Everybody listen to this. One of my friends is 85 and just hired me to become her life coach. At first, I laughed when she approached me. What did she have that was unfinished? Our conversation informed me it wasn't a question of unfinished business. It was a question of new business. Recently diagnosed with cancer, she felt the need to hurry and learn more things. Her Facebook account needed tending to. Her LinkedIn experience was just starting. I don't know how much talent my friend has, but I do know that she is always living life to the fullest.
Nice.
That's just, and when I read that, it just gave me chills, because it tells us that no matter where you are in your life, that just a little flip of the switch that pulls us into the, you know, optimistic category, or even just smiling for the day, because some people can't even get out of bed. The tears are flowing.
Exactly. Okay?
So, the cool part about this book is that because they are all stories and different types of advice, you can actually sort of flip open the book and see where your finger lies and go, oh, maybe I need to read that today. So you don't have to worry about, oh, it's a big book, I can't get through it. It's absolutely got stories on and everything that you could want to know about. So I'm going to highly recommend Contagious Optimism, Uplifting Stories and Motivational Advice for Positive Forward Thinking. David, we have reached the RL3 point. Are you ready?
I am.
Oh, I warned David about this at the beginning. But this is good. Three silly, goofy, off-the-wall questions that get to know a little bit more about David. Here's the first one. David, what is your favorite smell?
My favorite smell is the smell of, have you ever been to the beach in the winter?
No, I haven't. Describe it for me.
The beach, not forget Florida, because I'm originally from Connecticut, but the beach, anywhere, whether you're the Pacific Northwest or the Northeast, the smell of the beach in the winter, there's something about it. It's my number one favorite smell. Absolutely.
Give it like a word, like it smells like, you know, home, or it smells like, give me something that describes it.
It's funny. I don't want to use the smell of seafood, because that's not what it is. It's the smell of, it's the smell of the summer that's behind you. It's like, it's cold, so it's radiated 10 times more, but it's that smell of the beach. It's just take what you smell at the beach in the summer, times it by 10. That's how it smells in the winter.
Wow.
So it's like that excitement.
I love that. That's a very good explanation.
Thank
All right,
you.
David, where are you most ticklish?
My neck.
Really?
You cannot. If you come near my neck within an inch, I'll start rolling in laughter. I can't handle it.
He's going to karate chop you. So when you go and see David speak, just walk up behind him and start tickling his neck. I'm sure he'll love it.
Oh.
Did your wife do that just to get you, tickle your neck?
Yeah, if I'm in like a foul mood or whatever, she'll come at my neck and I'll be like, come on, no, and then I lose it, and then I forgot why I was in a bad mood.
See, I love that. Everybody right now, identify your tickle points, and you don't need someone around. Just if you're getting in the bad mood, because even, did you hear that, everybody? David said, I was in a foul mood. Guess what, people? Yes, Even David, who wrote Contagious Optimism, is allowed to have a bad day.
Absolutely.
So, we know that without a shadow of a doubt. Okay, here is the third one, which we enjoy because it's a lot of fun here. We call it What's Your Fantasy Name? And people have called it other things, but I call it Fantasy Name. So we need the name of the very first pet you had, and then you mix that with the very first street you grew up on. So what would your fantasy name be?
My first pet was named Jingles.
Jingles?
Yeah, like all right. Christmas jingles.
Got it. And the street you grew up on?
The street I grew up on was Teresa Court in Connecticut.
Okay, so you are Jingles Teresa Court.
Oh, my God.
And what occupation would Jingles Teresa Court have?
What occupation?
Yeah, we always make up an occupation.
Huh. I'd say delivering Christmas cheer.
Nice, because you know what I saw? I saw like a clown. Or perhaps somebody that works next to Santa taking pictures of the children sitting on his lap. What do you think? I think Jingles Teresa Court would have that job.
That is fantastic.
Hey, David, where is, do you have a website or something people can get a hold of you?
Yep. Our website is contagiousoptimism.com. Mm-hmm. And on our site, you could learn how to share your stories because we believe everybody has stories. You could get links to all the different places to buy our book, whether it's online or in a store. You could follow our events, follow our lecture series, or just read our news, read the bios of all our authors. So it's all there at contagiousoptimism.com.
Fantastic. Well, Jingles, it has been a treat having you on. And thank you so much, David, for being with us today, and have a fantastic day.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Bye-bye.